brutal exchange. I look good for this. She's got confidence. The taste deep sweet.
Yeah. You're listening to Revolution Synth, I should say, here on CGM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area, and also syndicating across several different stations throughout Canada. I'm your host, Dave, joined with Adam and Adam. And
this is not confusing.
Should we come up with nicknames? You'll be AP, you'll be AD, and I'll be Adam 3. And then, you know, everyone will just
be confused.
So
you'll be A3?
But D, P, and 3 all rhyme, yeah. So that's going to get confusing, too.
Well, we'll decide later. Anyways,
Can one of us be AA and the other A1? Actually, no, there's bad connotations.
But we're not going to specify who is who.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that makes it even worse.
Oh, I already know I'm A3. I gave it away. I'm sorry. But
spoilers.
Anyways, we came back from a set there of really obscure and actually a lot of avant-garde synthy music that Adam... A1? AP? Adam Pauke.
A1 steak sauce picked, yes. Okay. You know, basically, what I wanted to do in this initial set, I just wanted to highlight that synthesizer music tends to get lumped into this idea of synth pop, because when people, by and large, think of it, they think of a lot of more mainstream-leaning new wave from the 1980s. Yeah. But really, there is a wide range of how synthesizer was used in alternative music and in underground music. And I wanted to highlight that in this particular set. We actually ended off with what was probably the most, quote-unquote, mainstream track in that block by a band called Ico. They actually hailed from Montreal, Quebec, and they were part of an art scene from an art college around the area that they grew up in. They basically modeled themselves after various groups like the Human League, definitely influenced heavily by Brian Eno and Kraftwerk, to make a very alternative and kind of tongue-in-cheek album that was all about technology and the changes that would happen to humanity through the advent of this different technology being implemented. As we heard in that song, Elevator, that was from the album 83, fittingly enough, released in 1982. So, go figure. Before that, we heard from the synth punk chaos of Philip Willing PA. Not a lot of information about this group. They did hail from Nova Scotia, and they really only had this single released, basically nothing else recorded from this group. But we heard the title track from their Orphan Baby single released in 1981. Prior to that, we heard, definitely ranging more towards the avant-garde element of things, the jazz electronic combination of Null Set. This was a group from Halifax, Nova Scotia. They released an EP in 1980 called New Job. And from this, we heard Tits de Nous. And we started things off with Joe Naylor, a very obscure artist who only had one EP and one single to his name. He was originally from Vancouver, BC. I know he did some other types of performance arts thereafter, but really not too much in terms of production of music. We heard something from his I'm Canadian Beer single, the very off-kilter I Hate Fluorescent Lights. And I think, again, we went from very avant-garde off-kilter material to stuff that was much more pop-oriented and then punk-oriented, kind of showing the range of which how synthesizer would be used in this era before it would become, to say homogenized might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but definitely it played a certain role in music as it became more mainstream in the 1980s before, I think, a break occurred. And then there was this, revitalization of use of keyboards and Moogs within the past 20 years or so.
There's a long gap where people didn't use synthesizers anymore.
It's true.
It was verboten, pretty much, yeah.
What?
It was verboten. It's a German word.
Oh, okay.
But basically, yeah, not a lot of people use it. A few groups did. Like, you had, like Stereo Lab and whatnot who were, like, messing around with that. But it wasn't as prominent as it once were. It was pretty much taboo if you didn't, like, you know, just have, you know, distorted guitar and, like, a heavy drum fill in every song. You were kind of, like, ostracized. Thankfully, things changed a bit to include these sounds again. But, yeah, we were really just focusing on the period from the late 70s up until about the mid-80s, where we really saw this new dynamic of synthesizer take place in different music scenes. And we're definitely going to hear that in its way that it influenced punk music and new wave music in this set coming up, featuring, I think, some of the key players in the application of synthesizer.
We're going to hear Devo, who, we can't have a synthesizer show without Devo. They really, really changed things in the way music was played with synthesizers and the way music was constructed, even.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no one like Devo.
It's true. They're like the most fully formed concept of a band. Like, they have the whole, you know, philosophy and, you know.
It is part of their ethos, basically, to incorporate that as well. You know, and also their presentation, wearing these, like, space-age, like, suits that were made out of garbage bags. But, you know, the presentation was there. They wanted to be, like, tongue-in-cheek futuristic, and that included incorporating synthesizer. But, you know, you can definitely also call that something that was needed for the aesthetics of Tube Boy Army.
Yeah.
Tube Boy Army was about that sort of retro-futurism as well.
Gary Numan's first band before he went solo with the song Cars, which is what he might be best known for, but also he had the album and song Our Friends Electric, which is really just an amazing album, and in itself it is a concept album, but it came out in 79, so we're going to hear a track from that, and we're also going to hear something from the Stranglers, who were involved in the punk scene, but they always gravitated more towards the prog side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And people really didn't... There's a lot of people that really didn't like them at the time because of that. It wasn't just three chords and shouting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which, there's nothing wrong with that, but they did it differently. So we'll hear something from them. And we're going to start off with something from Subway Sect. I think everyone here knows who the band is, but maybe a lot of people don't know. Vic Goddard was the main songwriter in this group. And unfortunately, their initial lineup went through a lot of issues with recording. They were managed by the Clash's manager at the time, Bernie Rhodes, and they recorded an album that's kind of been bootlegged and been released in various forms throughout the decades that went on to be quite mythical, I guess. Because it was so hard to find for so long, and re-recordings of them have turned up. But this was also recorded by the Clash's sound man at the time, Mickey Foote. They put out two singles, and then they kind of broke up, and Vic Goddard kind of went on as Vic Goddard in the Subway Sect.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to hear this song, which, from the moment I heard it, I absolutely loved it. The way the synthesizers are in this song is completely different from... Well, in this set, each one, they're used differently within the punk context. But you were describing it during the break, the way the synthesizers are in this song. And they also have a weird, like, bubbly sound at one point. Just a really catchy, great song. So I thought maybe we should play that one.
You know, with that said, Dave, let's get to it. Just before we do, just a reminder to check out our website at revrock.blogspot.com for more information about the show and the bands we love. Here we are with music from Subway Sect on Revolution Synth.
I'm a trial scene. see. We didn't have much idea of the kind of climate waiting. We used our hands for guidance, like the children of a preacher, like a dry tree seeking water, or a daughter. Nice and sleazy. Nice and sleazy does it.
You're